Orleans. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Country music songwriter Jim McCormick says there's no real trick to writing for singers like Ronnie Millsap, Randy Travis, or Tim McGraw.
I can only follow the sort of the truth meter in me and the beauty meter in me and use that to hopefully create something that will trigger that same space for somebody else to inhabit. Oh, it's all that love I spread
around. Yeah, it's all coming back to me now. Jim McCormick is a poet of country music whose songs have hit the top of the charts. Here's a rebroadcast of his truth and beauty after the break. Yeah, it's all. It's never too late to congratulate a singer-songwriter on a good record, much less the many that Jim McCormick has penned over the years. When we spoke with McCormick, two of his songs had hit number one on the Billboard chart. Country stars Brantley Gilbert and Jason Aldean did their part, of course, but it took a good old poet from New Orleans to make the word sing off the page. Our interview back then began with us listening to You Don't Know Her Like I Do, a breakup song that's surprisingly tender.
Hey, young friend, thanks for calling. It's good to know somebody cares. Yeah, she's gone, but I don't feel like talking. Might be just too much to bear to hear somebody say it's time certain, or to hear somebody say she ain't worth it. 'Cause you don't know like I do, you never understand, and you don't know we've been through. You think who's my best friend? And there's no way you're gonna help me. She's the only one who can. No, you don't know how much I got to lose. You don't know like I do.
That's Brantley Gilbert on vocal. Jim McCormick's other number one was the kind of song that's an earful of trouble. This is why young girls should never get into cars with cowboys. Here's Jason Aldean with Take a Little Ride.
I hope you're wearing those frayed out cutoffs. Makes me want to get lost out in the moonlight. Drop the tailgate down on a turn row. Watch the corn grow. Baby, that's a good night. Anyone from the heartland is gonna understand what I'm talking about right now. Ain't no doubt. We got a game plan. Well, I'm just ready to ride this Chevy down a little back road. Slide your pretty little cell phone over, get a little closer, turn up the radio. Put your pretty pink toes on the dash, lean the seat back. Man, I swear there ain't nothing looks better than that. Sweet tan little thing with nothing to do. I wanna take a little ride.
That's Jason Aldean singing his eighth number one single, Take a Little Ride. But we wanted to hear what a Jim McCormick song sounds like coming out of Jim McCormick.
Well, have you ever tried to wait up through the night for somebody to come home? On the way you find you have lost your mind, and you're the one who's all alone. But if you ever want to stop your waiting, call me out, I'll come, and we can trade in the tears for the good times. How's for yours and mine? Girl, don't you know I want to kiss you so much. I've been around Lakeside calling. I've been up where the cold wind blows, and I want you to take me home with you.
Thank you. We're listening to singer-songwriter Jim McCormick, and we're looking right at him. He's joined us at Elephant Quilt Studios in New Orleans. Thanks so much for coming out, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you, and thank you, Gwen. Thank you.
It's just a real pleasure to have you
here.
Thanks
a lot. My honor.
Oh, boy. Bjorn Borg, the great tennis pro, said that there's only number one. There is no other number that is relevant. So, Jim McCormick, do you agree?
Well, you know, this season, I can go along with that. I've had all the other numbers. This is a better number to have than the others.
Yes.
I feel very blessed and very fortunate by it happening. And it's certainly something that's far out of my control. You know, the last thing that was in my control was composing those songs.
Wow.
And so since then, there's been a team of musicians and producers and singers and radio promotion people and good luck and all of those things at work.
That's true.
On our behalf. So.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you nobody can take complete credit, but it has to start with somebody putting some words on a page, doesn't it?
I own that. I'll own that part of it. I really will. That's okay.
So what does it do? I mean, it must do something for you in terms of your self-confidence, in terms of, as well as like commercial, you know, I mean, the commercial aspects of success, of a number one success. You know, do you get to sort of join a kind of a club almost?
You do. I'll address that first. You know, the outward difference is measurable. The doors open, your phone rings, you do belong to a club. You now have a sort of 3-minute calling card.
Yeah.
He's the guy that wrote that song. You can be the guy that had a whole lot of great songs cut and all that, and there's nobody knows those songs, you know, for a long time. And of course, the exposure, the commercial return, all of that is significant. Internally, it's a real trip because because it does give you a little more confidence. You're unprepared for how to handle that confidence. You're unprepared. You know, I have told a friend of mine that I've spent the last 12 years in Nashville learning how to smile while getting my teeth kicked in. And that's just because the nature of what songwriters do is to hear the word no more than anything else. And we become comfortable and accustomed to that and continue to fight and work hard and wake up every morning and go right like our life depends on it again and have a great time doing it. You know, I mean, the paradise is the road to paradise, right?
That's right.
And so I've been on that road a long time and I still think I'm on that road. And I try to compartmentalize the success in a way that just lets me continue to do what I've been doing. Maybe I get to do it a little bit smarter and a little bit more strategically, but for the most part, I still work with the same people that I have for the last few years. And not a lot internally has changed as far as my process, but there is, you mentioned that confidence, and I've got to say that really the biggest difference for me internally is that it's within reach.
Yes.
It is, as a matter of fact, within reach. And before, you were only told it was within reach.
Right.
And now you go into work and you realize, today I might write my boy's college education. Today,
that's right.
Today I might do this, you know, and that puts a little bounce in your step. It certainly makes you, I think, a little more focused and ready to work.
Well, did you do anything for yourself? Did you ever, you know, did you dream with your wife sitting there, okay, one day I'm going to have a number one song, and when I have a number one song, we're going to do X. Did you do anything like that?
We're going to quit sweating when I have a number one song, you know. No, nothing big.
Okay.
You know, I think we'll find a way to carve out a celebration of some kind here or there. But
no Cadillac, no.
No, I think our toys are going to look a lot boring, you know.
A new refrigerator.
A new refrigerator, you know. A better insurance plan, or you know.
Exactly.
Yes, right.
We all need one. It's true. But, you know, songwriters are really my heroes because your work can be so personal, but at the same time, it can come out of so many different people's mouths, you know, very, very different people, you know. And it's like a great song is kind of like those traveling pants, you know, that story about the traveling pants, where, you know what I mean? It can fit anybody, you know, without really having to tailor the song. How do you work toward that?
I mean, those are some great descriptions of writing at its best right there, Gwen. It really is. And I think I'm very fortunate that I come from some some excellent teachers, not all of which are songwriters, you know, some poets, some scholars. And so, you know, I'm trying to give the listener something to inhabit, that's out of my own life. And, you know, how do I do that? I don't know. I can only follow the sort of the truth meter in me and the beauty meter in me and use that to hopefully create something that will trigger that same space for somebody else to inhabit.
Couldn't remember how it felt to be loved. I was standing on the edge of giving up. I'd forgotten what life's all about. Oh, but thanks to you, girl, it's all coming back to me now. Yeah, the sun.
Country music legend Ronnie Millsap singing It's All Coming Back to Me Now, a song written by John Mabe, Patrick Jason Matthews, and our guest, Jim McCormick. This is a rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. Coming up, The Power of a Poem. Stay with us. This is a rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Country music singer-songwriter Jim McCormick lives in New Orleans and Nashville, and he's written lyrics for a raft of performers, including Tim McGraw, Luke Bryan, Harry Connick Jr., and Randy Travis. But his writing is not exclusive to men. If you listen to Trisha Yearwood, chances are you've heard Jim McCormick. Not bad for a kid from the West Bank.
Never hear me knocking and no pair of boots. A man who wears his Wranglers for a Sunday suit. The kind that ain't afraid to get dirt on his hands and brings you fresh daisies in a coffee can. I like a man to ride me around pickup style. Tip his hat and wink at me and shoot me a smile. Take me two-stepping at the honky-tonk, yeah. That kind of man ain't hard to want, 'cause cowboys are my weakness. Give me some down-home rugged sweetness. A little bit of outlaw, a little bit of Jesus. Cowboys are my weakness.
You started up in Algiers, mm-hmm. right? Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And your dad was a merchant marine, mm-hmm. right? Did your mom work outside the house?
No, she was a homemaker.
You an only child?
No, had two brothers. I had a brother. He passed away, and I have a sister. So there were three of us. I was the oldest of three.
You're the oldest? Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. It's a lot of pressure.
Well, it didn't feel like it, but I guess it might have been.
And you're like one of those Jesuit boys, right?
I am.
Like raised all Catholic.
I am,
all
proudly.
The way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know it at the time, but I was doing okay, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came up in the Catholic schools in New Orleans from grade school, and then did my high school years at Jesuit High School. Did 1 year at Loyola University,
yeah.
a Jesuit institution, and then went to Georgetown University, another Jesuit institution, and graduated from there with my undergraduate. So they really got their hooks in me. And I all along the way, I enjoyed the Jesuit education. I really did. And I think it doesn't suit everybody. It certainly wasn't for all of my friends who were going through it when I was, but I think that structure and discipline was something that I responded to.
But just think about the musical talent that came out of that high school. Harry Connick Jr., Dr. John went to Jesuit for until he got kicked out.
I mean, you can stop right there, because that's an enormous piece of the pie, you know?
Isn't it? I mean, yeah. And it's nice because it shows the breadth of music that can come out of this town. It's not all jazz. It's not all New Orleans rhythm and blues. You know what I mean? It can be country, too.
Oh, sure, sure. You know I think when I was in my 20s and even when I first started going up to Nashville at about the age of 30, 32, it was a it might have been a sore point or a sticking point with some of my buddies or my acquaintances or my associates in the music scene here and stuff. Now that we're all older, and I think you know, you appreciate and respect good music no matter what genre it's in.
Yes.
And you know, anybody who's making their way, what you learn too is like anybody who's making their way in music deserves our appreciation. You know, I mean, we have so many great talents in this town, young and old. And
That's right.
And, you know, it's way too easy for me as a professional songwriter to say I need to just stay home. And often I do just need to stay home. But I try to take two nights or so a month and go put myself in a chair at Snug Harbor or wherever and listen to something. Go listen to some live music and don't forget why I started doing it in the first place.
Exactly. You got to songwriting through poetry. You know, and you started poetry, learning poetry in earnest at Georgetown, right? And so were there any particular poets that spoke to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a wealth of them. There's a whole bunch of them. And, you know, I mean, some of my favorite poets, you know, Jack Gilbert and James Wright. Roland Flint was a teacher of mine whose work I gravitated to very closely, and he was a great mentor and friend. And
was he from Maryland?
He was.
He was like a poet laureate in Maryland?
He was the poet laureate of Maryland.
Wow.
And I was so blessed to have him as a teacher.
Here's one called Pamela on February 8th, 1982. My daughter is sweet 16 today. And this is not just a thing to say, because she is that dearer sweetness steeped in grief. For her brother, dead almost 10 years now, twin and darling of her 6 years heart. And she bears him with her still on her birthday, feeling as I do how old the boy is too this year, wondering hopelessly what would be. I could wish her birthdays free of this, but how can they be? The boy is dead, the doctor's sentence permanent. To wish her uncomplicated happy birthdays would be to wish the boy alive or out of thought, one as impossible as the other. So she is early knowing what every human love is soaked in. We will have our quiet celebration, her choice of menu, a fire to watch, some useful presents and some not. And sometime in the day she will find me alone and speak to me of her brother. We'll hold each other and then go on, the boy between us, an obligation on our love to live for him as well, Ethan.
He taught me how to read poetry, how to think of poetry, how to think of myself as a poet, which was not to think of myself as a poet at all. His workaday attitude towards the craft is something that I have definitely carried with myself through, unconsciously, but carried it through into my life as a songwriter.
Right. And, you know, most people, particularly in this country, I mean, they think that they don't enjoy poetry or that poetry is too tough for them. But if you like songwriting, you like poetry.
There's great people writing in language that's very digestible for all of us.
Absolutely. You know? There's nothing like having a very strong feeling and finding the poem that matches that feeling, you know? Like, for instance, I remember years ago feeling like my life was stuck. And I ran across an Ezra Pound poem, and it said something like, the days are not full enough, and the nights are not full enough, and life slips by like a field mouse not shaking the grass. And every time I feel, like, stuck, I think about that poem. You know, I actually have it like in my office, just like on the wall.
No, you're speaking my language, Glenn. I think that's what you just described there is one of the great gifts of poems. And in my life, I know where some of those poems are for when I need them. These sacred texts to me, I know where they are, and I have the library, and I can see the spine of the book, and I know that poem's in that book, and when I need it, I can go find it, and that's a gift that Roland and my other teachers and my education in general, my parents gave me, you know, and I carry it through my whole life. And it's the best argument I can give anybody for education in the humanities and in literature. It's like you have a lifelong dialogue with these works, and they become your friends and your counselors and your confidants. And it's just
That's right.
I feel very, very, very lucky that I have that background and I get to bring it to bear on a career as a songwriter.
That's it.
And this, I have to say, is heartbreakingly gorgeous, okay? A song that you did it with Randy Travis, okay, who is one of my all-time favorite country music singers. I just love him. My mother loved him. My aunts loved him. Everybody loved Randy Travis, right? He's like one of those guys who, like, when he came on TV, people would yell in the other parts of the room, Randy Travis is on TV, and we'd all run to come see,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And but you and he did a song together that's called You Didn't Have a Good Time. And let's just listen to it, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Your hand was wrapped around a bottle. Your arm wrapped around her waist. You were running at full throttle. Big smile across your face. You were the life of the party, but it was only in your mind. I hate to be the one to tell you, you didn't have a good time. Well, I bet you don't remember kneeling in that bathroom stall, praying for salvation and cursing alcohol. Then you went right back to drinking like everything was fine. Well, let's be honest with each other, you didn't have a good time. So take a good hard look in the mirror and drink that image down. I'm the truth that you can't run from. I'm the conscience you can't drown. And the happiness you want so bad, you ain't gonna find until you start believing. Have a good time. When you woke up this morning, I guess you just assumed that you got something out of the empty bottles in. There ain't an angel that can save you when you're listening to the wine. And the demons, they won't tell you you didn't have a good time. So take a good hard look in the mirror and drink that image down. I'm the truth that you can't run from. I'm the conscience you can't drown. And the happiness you want so bad, you ain't gonna find until you start believing you didn't have a good time. Somebody had to tell you you didn't have a good time.
It's because his voice is the voice of an older person, a more experienced singer that helps sell that song too. I mean, you're a wonderful singer, but you probably can't sing that song like he can sing that song.
Indeed not. Are you kidding? That's the voice right there. That's the voice.
But, and then also, obviously, it's troubling because Randy Travis has had some personal troubles lately, and I worry about him, as I'm sure the rest of the country does.
Of
and,
course. Yeah.
And stuff. And so then you sort of wonder, you know, you just hope that, you know, he's back, you know, doing the things that he loves doing soon.
That's right. That's right.
But, you know, tell me about how you came up with this song. I mean, I know I can identify it with it. Randy Travis can identify with it. But you want to talk at all about where that song came from?
Yeah, I don't mind at all. I've told this story before. I mean, the occasion of writing this song is so much less inspiring than the things we have said so far. But I was living with a fella in Nashville named Chris, and we had gone out the night before, and we were on our way to a co-write together with our friend Jason. And in our evening the night before, he was the designated driver. I wasn't, so I was enjoying myself. And I was certainly overserved that night. And we were on our way to Jason's house, and I was like, you know, probably throwing down the Gatorades really fast. And he was like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, I was like, dude, don't tell me anything. I had a good time last night. And he said, you didn't have a good time. He goes, I was there. You didn't, you know, you might think you had a good time. And it really made me mad. You know, it really got under my skin. And so we showed up at Jason's house and you know, we were writing together a bunch of times already, and we were friends, and Jason immediately could tell something was wrong. And he's like, what's the matter? What? Nothing. You know, and Chris is like, I told him something. He don't like to hear it. Jason's like, what'd you tell him? You know, and classic songwriter. He's on it. He sees that there's something going on here. And Chris told him, I told him you didn't have a good time. And Jason just zeroed right in on that title. And it probably took me till lunch probably to come around to really cooperating, but they were going to have this song whether I was going to do it with them cooperatively or not. And I'm so glad that they held my feet to the fire. And,
yeah.
We wrote it in that direction, in the voice of the conscience from the very beginning. And that was the truth of why I didn't like hearing it, because
right.
Chris was and remains a dear friend, and he was being honest. And,
he called it.
And he called it, and it's not something that we like to hear.
Especially when you say I was overserved. That totally takes the responsibility off of you and puts it onto some poor cocktail waitress,
I'm still practicing my evasion. Right? I'm still not owning up to that night. But we got a good song.
We'll be meeting with your attorneys later. But I just love that line. So take a good hard look in the mirror and drink that image down. I'm truth that you can't run from. I'm the conscience you can't drown. And the happiness you want so bad, you ain't going to find until you start believing you didn't have a good time. That's just brilliant.
I got great co-writers.
Yeah.
I got great co-writers. That's all I can say.
So take a good, hard look in the mirror and drink that image down. I'm the truth that you can't run from. I'm the conscience you can't drown. And the happiness you want so bad, you ain't gonna find until you start believing you didn't have a good time.
You Didn't Have a Good Time was written by our guest, Jim McCormick, with Chris Bergsness and Jason Matthews. In 2016, Randy Travis was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. This is a rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. Stay with us. This is a rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Jim McCormick co-wrote a song that's perfect for tough economic times. Here's Craig Campbell with When I Get It, You'll Get It.
Hello, who's asking? A bill collector? Well, he ain't here. Oh, hell, I guess you got me. Well, mister, let me make this perfectly clear. Yeah.
get in line and wait. When I get it, you get it, and that's all you're getting today. Na 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 na.
You know what's funny? We go from the Randy Travis song to this song, and Jason Matthews is my co-writer on both songs. We wrote this with Craig Campbell. Craig actually had the hook, and he and I started it together. I listen to it now, and I just laugh. We started as a ballad.
And really?
It was a ballad, and it was, it's just laughable now because it came out, I think, perfectly as it should. But it was a slow song, and, I don't know what we were thinking.
Yeah, I tried to collect on a $50 bet. My buddy just looked at me, shook his head, and you know what he said? When I get it, you get it. You better back it on up and get off of my case. When I get it, you get it, and that's all you're getting today. Get a line and wait. When I get it, you get it, and that's all you're getting today. Na, 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 na.
Maybe you were thinking like in that Charlie Rich tradition, you know, that, what was that? That's that great song that Charlie Rich sings.
Behind Closed Doors?
No, that's another great song by Charlie Rich. No, this one is... Oh, Life's Little Ups and Downs.
Yeah.
Do you remember that song?
Yeah, sure I do.
That's
a
great song. Do you mind if we hear a little bit of it?
I'd love to.
I don't know how to tell her that I didn't get that raise and pay today. And I know how much she wanted the dress in Baker's window. And it breaks my heart to see her have to wait and cancel all the plans she made to celebrate. But I can count on her to take it with a smile and not a frown. She knows that life has its little ups and downs, like ponies on a merry-go-round. And no one grabs the brass ring every time, but she don't mind. She wears a
I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, it doesn't. It's funny you play Charlie Rich because I had a rock band here in New Orleans, and I was a big fan of soul music. And there was a gentleman named Chris who worked at Tower Records upstairs.
I know Chris. Chris sold me my first Frank Sinatra set.
The British gentleman.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was starting to think about Nashville and starting to think about country. And I was like, Chris, where are the white soul singers? Who's the guys, man? And he had two answers. He said Mick Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
He had to pick an Englishman.
Right, of course.
And Charlie Rich.
Wow.
And when I found Charlie Rich, I found the door through which I could go from my love for Otis Redding and Sam Cooke and all of that writing, especially
yes.
the Dan Penn songs and all of that. And I found, and then I found my way from Charlie Rich to Conway Twitty and
great
Earl Thomas
artist.
Conley, and the whole thing blew wide open for
yes.
me. And Randy Travis and Alan Jackson and Clint Black. And it was like, oh, this isn't just a bunch of square stuff. This is some soul music. This is really beautiful writing at its best. You
it
know?
Comes from the same place.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's the only difference is that, you know, once you go into the record store, they're in different sections. You know what I mean?
And on the radio dial, they're on different channels.
Yeah, but. And that is like people who don't know anything about music who are trying to tell you how to think about music.
It's a good point.
You know,
yeah.
And it's very upsetting, actually, because it's, you know what I mean? It bears on, you know, bad issues about race and things like that. But, you know, there is nobody who rocked harder than Conway Twitty. You know what I mean? Nobody.
Let me tell you about a girl I know. She's my baby and she lives next door. Every morning when the sun comes up, she brings me coffee in my favorite cup. That's how I know. Yeah, yeah. Hallelujah, I just love her so.
Hallelujah.
It's all, yeah, it's all the same swirl.
Now if I call her on the telephone and tell her that I'm all alone, by the time I count from one to four, I hear her on my door. In the evening when the sun go down, when there is nobody else around, she kisses me and she holds me tight and tells me, Daddy, everything's all right. So I know, yes, I know, hallelujah, I deserve so.
This is Music Inside Out. We're listening to Ray Charles and Conway Twitty, but we're talking to country music songwriter Jim McCormick. Country music, more than any other music, tells these stories that are extremely relevant to the lives of the people who are listening to the music, to the audience. You know, for instance, like, okay, I love Frank Sinatra, right? But I don't live a ring-a-ding-ding life, you know what I mean? Or, you know, I can maybe listen to rap sometimes, but I will never be that angry, nor that rich. I don't have bling, you know? And all, but country music tries, I think, harder to, like, you know, I mean, capture the very person who's sitting next to you at the red light.
Yes. Yeah, you know. I agree with that. I think that there's, you know, the sort of the poets that I studied, that was really where I came from. I thought I was going to be an academic poet and teach in the universities and publish poems in small magazines, which is what I did for a little while. And I thought that that's what I would do. But the poets that I was most attracted to were the guys who used just more sort of commonplace diction. Their wisdom seemed a little more homespun than academic or theoretical, and I think that temperament may have been something that suited me better for country music's predisposition towards that thing also. You know,
I think
what I mean?
You're right.
But it's all artifice. Even though we're saying these things, mm-hmm. it's still a craft, and I think, you know, there's a lot of skills and a lot of sort of components to what country music is and how those songs are created and what I think what I'm trying to say is just that there's still a palette to be drawn from and it's not wide open. I mean, it is.
That's very true. You know, I mean, you can't really write a song about Enron necessarily. You know what I mean? But I mean, how many cowboy songs are there out there?
There's a few.
I mean, my word. There are more cowboy songs than there are cowboys.
This may be true. Gwen, that's a good idea for a song.
You can have it.
Thank you. All right.
It's yours for free. I mean, how much hay have you touched in life?
Right. Well, you know what? I got to say, I know where you're going with that.
Been going round and round all day, baling some hay and stacking it all up. Can't wait for the sun to go down, roll into town, shine the old truck up.
My co-writer on that song is a Texan farmer.
Okay.
And from Groover, Texas. And he did his share of baling hay. He really did. So let me just say that, like, the sweet tan little thing with nothing to do may be mine, but the hay bales are his.
Okay.
I don't know where you've got me scrambled now.
And that's the story of, that's the glory of collaboration.
Which one do you want the blame for?
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, you know. And but you collaborate often with the singers who are actually going to sing the songs. And collaboration takes many forms. Sometimes it can come just with a conversation, and sometimes it's really back and forth with lines and stuff like that. But, you know, when you are working, because you do have a job. I mean, you work for people, right? BMG Chrysalis you work for. And so, you know, this is your job. But, you know, are you channeling somebody else's feelings into a song? Are you the conduit, or is this you?
All of the above. It depends on what the day calls for. I think, you know, when I'm working with an artist, to address your point, I see my role as a facilitator.
Okay.
And usually these artists are friends of mine, and so my job, so to speak, is to be alongside them and help them get to the song that they want.
Okay.
And sometimes that's very little more than say a sort of editoring you know, just being alongside. Sometimes it may be coming up with more raw material and really, you know, but
fleshing it out, putting some meat on those bones.
Right, right. It just depends on what the day calls for.
But how married are you to the lyrics of a song? You know, like particularly a song that you're doing as part of your job for, you know, another for another artist, you know. I mean, how strongly do you feel about the words once you have decided upon them?
You mean once we say the song is finished?
Yeah.
And there it is?
Mm-hmm. Woot. There it is.
I mean, I'm not against an artist, particularly one who might sell a couple million records, altering a lyric or two.
Okay.
It is my job. This is very much my career. At the same time, there's a lot of personal investment in it. You know, hopefully you've done the job as well as it possibly can be, and no one would see room for improvement.
Okay.
If they do, maybe you should take a good look at their suggestion. Maybe it is better.
But then, okay, so now I'm going to walk you back to your number one hit, okay? This, you know, Mr. Aldean.
Yes.
You know, Jason Aldean. He's got this number one song.
This is going back to drinking, is it?
It's going back to hate. It's going back to drinking. And it's going back to changing words in a poem, right? And so, you know, he... A very sexy song, obviously, very fun, lovers, you know, cruising, you know, everybody wants to do that. But in the song, you know, you all mentioned a particular beverage that, you know what I mean, that the protagonist is drinking,
yes.
You know? And then the song hits, and then Coors Beer decides it's going to underwrite the tour that Jason Aldean is going to have, right?
Yes.
And they say, what? We would really love it if you could change that title of that beverage to a Coors beverage, right?
Yes, yes.
And Aldean does.
Swing by the quick stop, grab a couple Rocky Tops, then ease on out your way to your place around 8 o'clock.
How do you feel about that?
Well, he came to us and asked if we would provide some suggestions. He said, here's the situation. Coors has offered me a very nice sponsorship. I would like to appreciate them by not advertising another brand. Could you help me with this? So from our point of view, the artist came to us and asked us to help him make this transition as fitting as possible for the song. He didn't have to do that at all. It's certainly, it's very understandable. It was not, I'm sure it's not a small sponsorship. So what little we can do to help is absolutely fine with me, you know, for
okay.
sure.
So you don't feel like artistically raped or, you know.
So far from it.
Okay.
Well, and this isn't, you know, the detail itself. I mean, on principle, I don't even have a principle about it necessarily. But on this one particular instance, the detail that we're talking about altering, you know, is it okay? Well, could you make it a Dodge Charger instead of a Trans Am?
Mm-hmm.
No problem. You know, I mean, that's not so. I'm not saying if it was a more personal detail that we would have had a problem with it. I'm just saying it was on the scale of things a minor detail. If Mr. Aldean had gotten a sponsorship by what's the juice that kids drink?
Sunny D.
Sunny D. and I think I would have protested the inclusion of Sunny D in this song, because the sort of long live rock and roll, you know, attitude of the song would have been compromised by the inclusion of Sunny D.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, you're right. Okay, well, let me ask you this. Now, before you go, I want to mention that we've learned that you are working on a new CD. So, well, I'm going to ask you. You can't get out of here without singing a song.
I'd love to. Okay. I'd love to. These are the current songs, I know.
Exactly.
This is a song called Will I Want To that I wrote with my friend Jay Knowles. And it's a favorite of mine. We wrote it about a woman, and it has since become... something I think of dear friends when I play and other people in my life when I play. And thanks for asking.
Well, it got hard at first and it got easier, then it got hard again. I guess that's how it's gonna be. living without you. Tell me, how's it living without me? I go places there and I see faces there where for a moment I think yes, but no, it couldn't be. Tell me, do you ever turn around and think that you see me? Will I ever get where I can forget about you? Will I ever be who I used to be around you? And if I have the chance to dance a dance without you, will I want to?
That's really romantic and beautiful, and
I hope I'm getting better. I do. My wife might not think so, but I think I'm trying. You know?
Well, what's your favorite song? I mean, what's your kid's favorite song that you do?
Oh, I think the fun has been watching the last two songs be on the radio. You know, I mean, it's really for the songs to be on the radio on our way to school, on our way home, on, you know, that's just an extraordinary thing. So I have to say that, you know, Take a Little Ride and You Don't Know Her Like I Do are definitely the family's favorites. You know, but you ask Alan Toussaint what's his favorite song, and I've heard him say Southern Night. I've heard him say, you know, or which one has been best to you or whatever.
That's
or
right. Yeah, he fudges very elegantly.
You,
yes,
you
he
love
does.
All your children.
Yes, you but, love all of them. You know. But you secretly love one more. Okay, then can you do a chorus of Take a Little Ride for us?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure. Let's see. I'll do the hey. I'll sing that hey line for you, Gwen. I'll sing it.
Thank you.
Been going round and round all day, baling some hay. Stacking it all up, can't wait for the sun to go down. Roll into town, shine the old truck up, swing by the quick stop, grab a little shiner box, and then ease on out your way to your place around 8 o'clock. Yeah, I'm just ready to ride this Chevy down a little dirt road. Slide your pretty little self on over, get a little closer, you can play my radio. Put your pretty pink toes on the dash, lean the seat back. Girl, I swear there ain't nothing looks better than that sweet tan little thing with nothing to do. I want to take a little ride with you.
That must be fun driving in a car and hearing that song come on the
it's
radio.
It's fun all around. You know, I mean, my co-writer Dylan Altman called me. He's like, man, I'm so proud of our song. I mean, I know it's not Song of the Year. I'm like, dude, don't ever say that. You know, I said, listen, that's that. And as I like to say, I'm like, that lyric might not be rocket surgery, but but that song just, I said, to me, I'm so proud of it because it screams long live rock.
It does.
And it's got a swagger about it that I'm very proud that my adolescent love for Led Zeppelin has shown up in something that I'm writing today. That's what I'll say.
Exactly. Long live Zeppelin.
It's a big tent.
Yes,
what did
it
I say?
Is.
Country music's a big tent.
It's a very big tent. Thank you again.
Gwen, my real honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Jim McCormick joined us here at Elephant Quilt Studios in New Orleans.
Way down inside. You need my, 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 yeah.
been listening to a rebroadcast of Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Jason Rhine, Paul McDonald, Margaret Howes, and Sean Collins. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Pinkalope Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, Shop Nadine Blake, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax-deductible, thanks to our partnership with National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.